have everybody back with us this afternoon. Brendan read for us just a few minutes ago in Matthew chapter 13, the parable of the sower. And in this particular instance in Matthew chapter 13, Jesus defined what this particular parable meant. Sometimes when Jesus told parables, he didn't always expound upon what the meaning of it was. It was, you know, pretty clear in many cases what the underlying meaning was. But in this case, he did explain it, starting in verse 18 of Matthew chapter 13. He said, "Hear then the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart, and is what is sown along the path. For what was sown on rocky ground, this is one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet he has no root in himself, but endures for a while. And when tribulation or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately he falls away. After all, was sown among the thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. As for what was sown in the good soil, this is the one who hears the word and understands it. He indeed bears fruit and yields, and in one case a hundredfold, and in another 60, and another 30. This is probably one of the most well-known parables, even those that might fall into some of these categories of the soils many times know that this particular parable. They may not always know that they're rocky ground or thorny ground, but many times they may know this reference, at least a little bit. But there are those that over time have rejected Christ, and we want to talk about that this evening. Because when people reject Christ in these different fashions, sometimes it provides a stumbling block to those that are trying to teach. And the sower needs to continue to sow, even though sometimes the hearts aren't receptive. So we want to talk tonight about stumbling blocks to sowing. There are those that are like the wayside soil, in that they may be ones that have for years rejected Christ. They hear the word and they're not saved. And they just continue to live the same way that they always have, regardless of what it is that they hear. In Acts chapter 26, we read about King Agrippa when Paul was speaking to him, and he said, "Most thou persuadest me to be a Christian." And he was one that the seed just didn't take root. At least it didn't at that time. We don't have any record of whether or not he ever accepted that. And so what Jesus said about this is that these are those who, as soon as they hear it, Satan comes and takes it away. And so Satan's certainly working to keep those from accepting the seed. There's also those that fall among the rock, and it begins to sprout, and it's quickly uprooted. And one thing that I always enjoyed doing growing up was working in the garden. I didn't really enjoy it, but that's one thing I did growing up. And my dad would have us prepare the soil, and getting rocks out of the soil that were going to keep the seed from germinating like it should would be one thing that we would do. And so I learned a lot about planting in those days. And so it's something that needed to be done. The seed needed to go into soil that was prepared. It's not stony ground is not going to take the seed. We had some soil at our house, or lack of soil rather, some patches in our yard that there really was no soil. There was just gravel underneath the grass, and the grass wouldn't germinate in that. And you know, I could go to Home Depot and throw seed on it and water it. It might come up for a few days, but when the sun came, it was going to be dead because there wasn't anything for it to take root in. Also, Jesus talked about those who are like those the seed that falls on the ground and is choked by weeds, and it never produces any fruit, or it never grows to the point that it produces fruit. I've probably told you this before. It was kind of funny now. It wasn't funny at the time to my dad, but he told me to go hoe the okra. So what he meant was he meant to go hoe the weeds out of the okra. He didn't mean for me to hoe the okra, so I did what he said, and I hoed up every one of those okra. And at that point, I didn't really like okra. I mean, I've grown to to like it over time, but at that point, that was a really good thing to happen, with there to be no okra. But I was supposed to get the weeds. I wasn't supposed to take up the plant, but if the weeds are there, it's going to choke the plants that are trying to grow. And, you know, when we think about this parable, many times we think about, you know, there's these three different types of soils that are bad, and then there's the one type that's good. And we all consider that anybody in the church is the good soil. But, you know, sometimes we might be represented by the rocky ground, or we might be represented by the thorny ground, because sometimes people's hearts and minds are not really focused in on what it is that they're doing. Those that just because somebody attends services from time to time doesn't mean that they're not being choked by the world. And one phrase I heard, I don't remember who said it first, but you know, there are some people that are sitting on the premises instead of standing on the promises. That's old. The last time when you heard that, you fell off your dinosaur probably. But that's something that has been said over time. There are those that are not standing on the promises. They're sitting on the premises. So they're here, they're present physically, but that's about it. And that happens sometimes because we're not focused on what we're doing. We may be focused on all other cares of the world other than, you know, living as a Christian should. And sometimes it's materialism, it might be other things, but we can be choked. Then there's those that the seed falls on the good ground and it grows healthy and it produces fruit. So, very quick overview of that parable that we all understand. But the thing that's consistent with all of these different types of soils is that there was a seed that was being sown, and that there was a sower that was sowing the seed. And so, really, the point that Jesus is making here in this parable is that there's different types of hearts, and when the seed falls on different hearts, it's going to have different results. But what we also realize is that sometimes those that are sowing the seed, they can become discouraged. They can have different things that require a little bit of an attitude adjustment. So I want to talk about those in our lesson tonight. One thing that we need to be concerned about when sowing seed is that we can have false expectations. We can become disillusioned. We may become discouraged because maybe it's others don't live up to our expectations, or people don't respond in the way that we expect. And one of the things that I have heard over and over through different types of sales meetings is a sales manager will ask them, how many times did you call on that prospect? How many times did you call? Well, I called them once and they didn't answer the phone. Well, did you ever try to call them again? Did you try a different method? Did you go to their office? And so there's all kinds of different ways and numbers of times that it needs to be tried. And, you know, Lynn Ash, the gentleman that works with me, sold a lot of equipment, $500,000 worth to EBSCO Media when I was there. And he had been trying over a year to get an appointment with one of the people there. I think I would have given up a long time ago before he did. Maybe that's why I'm not in sales. But he was persistent, and he finally got the sale because he was persistent. When it comes to spiritual matters, just if we introduce the truth to somebody at some time and they, well, you know, they're not interested at that time, then we never pursue it again. Many of you had met my dad when he was here years ago for a meeting, and maybe you've met him on other occasions before he passed away. But one thing about him is he was very persistent. He was not always patient with us, but he was very patient when it came to working with people in spreading the gospel, because he'd befriend them, he'd go fishing with them, he'd spend time with people socially, he would do things to try to establish a relationship, and sometimes that took a long time before somebody would open up and they would when they would respond to the gospel, if ever. You know, sometimes he never saw the result of that. But sometimes
people give up when they're trying to teach, and they give up too soon. Keith Stonehart, many of you know
him because he came and spoke
with us, and I worked with him at camp. He recently baptized a young man who attended camp and has traditionally kind of been a little troublemaker at camp over the years. And I talked to Keith last week, and he said, I've been working with him, you know, since July, and he was just baptized last week. He said it took a long time for him to break down some walls in that relationship to get to why this little boy was being so rebellious. I say little boy, he's a senior in high school, but just why he was so rebellious. Well, it took time and it took patience on Keith's part to get to
that point.
But if he had gotten discouraged and said, well, you know, he's just rebellious, he doesn't want to talk to me, and every time I go talk to him, it's like talking to a brick wall. And that's what it was like at the beginning of that relationship. But Keith didn't give up on it, and it yielded a good result in the kingdom of God. So sometimes we think everything's going to proceed well. We think everything's going to stay right on track, and that we're going to do A, B, and C. And when we get to the end of, you know, correspondence course number 5, then they're going to be obedient.
And that's not always the reality. People become discouraged and even to despair if they have false expectations about sowing the seed.
One other example in my father's life was a man that he talked to for years who had been unfaithful for a long time. His wife and his kids did attend services, but he never did and would not. And it turned out that after my sister passed away when she was 19 years old, and it was very devastating to my parents. This man who my dad had been trying to teach for years and years obeyed the gospel after my sister passed away, and the reason that he did that is because of the respect that he had for my father. And he said that years ago, when he was not living the way that he should, he also had a child that died at a very young age. And whoever the preacher was at the time working with him told him that God is punishing you for the way that you're living. And he had been mad at God for years for taking the life of his child. And so that was not the right thing for that preacher to say to him, that God's punishing you. The reason that your child died is because you're not living the way that you should. And that had stuck with him all those years, and that's why he wouldn't be obedient to God. And so when he saw that the same thing happened to my father, who he knew was a good man, and he had a lot of respect for him, he said, I now know that this could happen to anybody. And it was because of the relationship that my dad had established with him that he came around to that point eventually. I'm certainly not saying that others didn't have some influence in that too, but that was one of the situations where it took a long time for somebody to respond and people didn't give up. And so if we get discouraged and we despair because something doesn't happen within our time frame, you know, that's a good lesson for us. In fact, you know, the same thing happened to Jesus, that there were those that didn't follow Jesus for the right reasons and turned away from him. We won't take the time to read all of John chapter 6, but if you look at John chapter 6 in verse 2, you see that Jesus had fed the 5,000. It says a large crowd was following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. And Jesus went up on the mountain, there he sat down with his disciples. So Jesus here feeds the 5,000. People are seeing what he's doing, and there are those that follow him for the wrong reasons. And in verse 26, Jesus answered them, "Truly I say to you, you are seeking me not because you saw signs, but because you are full of the loaves." So you're following me for food. You're not following me because of the right reasons.
And when Jesus started teaching them about Him being the bread of life, and it was kind of a deep subject for them to be listening to, as He describes how He was the bread of life and that they needed to partake of Him, there were many that didn't understand, they were confused, and they forsook Him. If you look at verses 66 through 68 of John chapter 6, it says, "After this, many of His disciples turned back and no longer walked with Him. So Jesus said to the 12, 'Do you also want to go away as well?' Simon Peter answered Him, said, 'Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life, and we have believed and have come to know that You are the Holy One of God.' Jesus answered them, 'Did I not choose you, the 12, and yet one of you is the devil?' He spoke of Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, for he was one of the 12 was going to betray them or betray Him." So here, Jesus has multitudes following Him. Jesus tells them, "I know some of you are following Me because you want the food, and here's other reasons you need to follow." Many of you stopped following Him. He said to His disciples, "Do you want to stop following too?" And Peter said, "To whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life." So, Peter certainly helped Jesus not be discouraged in this situation, because Jesus could have been discouraged about the number of people that no longer followed Him for the right reasons. But the end result of this situation is that Jesus didn't become discouraged and throw His hands up and say, this effort is not worth it. People are not following Me for the right reasons. And, this is a lot of hard work and it's not paying off." And that's not certainly what Jesus did. Jesus did not become discouraged and quit teaching anyone. And a sower should expect that might happen. Seed may or may not produce, depending on what kind of heart that it falls upon. But the unfruitfulness of the seed should not prevent you from sowing the seed. The fruitfulness of the ground and how the ground accepts the seed should not prevent the sower from sowing. The labor for God is never done in vain. In fact, when there are those of us that prepare classes and prepare sermons and other things, even if
no one in the class gets anything out of it, which we hope that they do, still the one that prepares for it
gets something out of it, hopefully for themselves. And it is an encouragement to them. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 58, Paul said, "Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain." It's not in vain. Doesn't mean that you always see results immediately. A postman's job is to deliver the mail. Most of the time it's junk mail because people don't really write letters anymore. They send texts. But you still get mail. And I won't teach you about the benefits of marketing and mail, even though I could do that because we want people to print things where I work. But you get things in the mail and you either respond to it or you don't. It may be a good message. It may not be. It may not have grabbed your attention. But you don't go fire the postman because somebody didn't respond to the mail. Now, you might fire the person that wrote the mail or designed it. But you don't. The postman has nothing to do with whether or not you accept the message in the mail or whether or not you respond to it. It's his job to deliver it. Then you make the decision about what you do with that. You might throw it in the circular file, or you might open it up and consider it. And you compare that to the sower. The seed is thrown. The ground can either accept it or not. We can either accept the Word of God or not. The sower sows the seed. It's our job to sow the seed. It's our job to deliver the mail like the postman does.
Then it's up to that person whether or not they accept that. So we don't need to get
so tied up into the results
But we need to do the work that will eventually yield the results in some cases. I hate to keep throwing sales things in here, but one of the things that popped in my head was that we're always talking about the pipeline. And some of you may be familiar with that phrase. If you don't have a good pipeline, then you're not going to have good results. What does that mean? It means that you need to have so many prospects and so many customers that you're talking to that you have a steady flow of product that you're selling. And if you don't have anything in your pipeline, that means you don't have any prospects. And you can make the same analogy work with what we do in teaching. It means that you don't have all your eggs in one basket. In business, you don't want it be a failure because there's one deal or one customer that you were banking on getting and that one didn't work. We should be talking to multiple people at different times. There should be a sower would be sowing seed all over the place, and some of it's going to come forth and some of it's not. And I hope you get that analogy. The more that you're talking to people, the more people that you are talking to, the more chance that there is going to be a result. There is also one thing that we have talked about already a little bit is the danger of expecting instant success. Jesus here in this parable was talking about farming. And I know there's a lot of us that are city folk and we don't understand farming unless you had a dad that made you do a little bit of it. But you don't plant something in the morning and then come back in the afternoon and gather it, do you? Unless you're planting weeds, they seem to spring up really quick. But it doesn't happen that quickly. And the farmer doesn't quit if he goes out in the morning and I don't see any seed sprouting. And somebody that doesn't have any experience, they may plant a seed and then they dig it up every morning and say, Is it sprouting yet? No, that's not going to work. You have to wait. There are some times that we see instant results when we do certain types of work. We wash the dishes or clean the house, we might see instant results on that if you've ever tried that. In other areas, there are things that you don't see instant results. One thing that infuriated my dad is when we come home from school and he'd say, "What did you learn today?" I said, "Nothing." Has that ever happened before to anybody else? Nobody, what did you do today? Certainly you must have learned something. But then over the years, something had an effect. There was some knowledge that was being dispersed. I'll use the example of band. At the beginning of the year, we had a band parents' night where the band was going to premiere their show for all the parents, and they had never shown it to anyone. And I can tell Brendan this now because we're at the end of the year, but it wasn't really good at the beginning. It was not as good as it is now. But if I asked Brendan, what did you do in band today? What did y'all learn? Nothing. But when you see the end result at the end of the year when they're winning competitions and getting accolades, it's not the same thing. It is not the same show that we saw at the end of August that we're seeing now in the middle of October. It's the same music, but it's polished. It's good. It's something that obviously there's been a lot of work that's been done to it, but on a day-by-day basis, you might not see that result. And Brendan might say, we didn't do anything. We didn't learn anything today. Well, yeah, you did when you see what happened at the beginning and what happens at the end. Physical growth is the same way. Most of the parents here at one time or another probably had a measuring stick in their child's bedroom that shows the progress of how the child is growing. But did you measure them every day? Well, nobody does that unless your new mother. But after you do that a few times, you realize, you know, I'm not seeing any progress here. You might do it every few months and see how somebody grows. You don't measure every day. And so what I'm saying is, if you're expecting instant results when it comes to the gospel, sometimes we don't see instant results. Hopefully, over time, we do see some. In fact, I'll just use Ethan as an example, because I said this morning, I used an example of him at school, and there was something that happened, and he ended up quoting scripture in class, and the first thing I thought when he told me that was, when did you learn that? You know, when did you learn where those scriptures were? But at some point, either through being here or listening to his grandparents or being at Florida College or somewhere, there's something that took that he's able to now go back and tell somebody else about. And at what point that happened, we're not really sure. But what you see is that there are results that you see over time. And you have to be patient when it comes to working with those that you want to teach the gospel of Christ. Just because you don't see any progress doesn't mean there's not any. Also, there can be a danger of discouragement because of controversy. Jesus certainly ran into controversy when he was sowing the seed. There were those that didn't listen to him. We've already referenced what happened in John chapter 6.
Paul and Barnabas
in Acts chapter 15. They had a difference of opinion and they parted and went their separate ways. Acts chapter 15, verse 37. Barnabas wanted to take with him John called Mark, but Paul thought best not to take with them one who had withdrawn them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. And there arose a sharp disagreement, so that they separated from each other. Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed to Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and departed, having been commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord, and he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. And that's always been an interesting insight into the lives of these men. But the bottom line here is that they both kept working. Now, there was a controversy, there was a disagreement, but they both kept working for the cause of Christ, and the cause of Christ was benefited from that because of their dedication to it. Sometimes there are churches that have disagreements. There are brethren that have disagreements with one another. And it causes some weaker brethren sometimes to quit working for the Lord because they got into a disagreement with a brother or sister. Then they quit the Lord. And that's not a good thing. When controversy arises, you don't see, you know, Paul and Barnabas and John Mark, you know, quitting their work. They just went about it in different areas. Paul also met controversy head on in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. He references that. He says in verse 24 of 2 Corinthians 11, five times I received at the hands of the Jews
the 40 lashes less one.
Three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Three times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I was adrift at sea. Unfrequent journeys and dangers from rivers, danger from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brothers, and toil and hardship, and through many sleepless nights, and hunger and thirst, often without food and cold and exposure. And apart from other things, there is the daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all the churches. You're reading this, to me, it sounds like one of those prescription advertisements on TV that talk, you know, for 10 seconds about what it's going to do for you, and then it spends the next minute and a half telling you all the horrible side effects.
And, well, do I really want that?
Well, what Paul says here is that there are a lot of bad things that happened to him while he was preaching, but he didn't quit. The end result was worth it. Certainly there was controversy in the life of Paul, and there was unfairness that was thrust upon him by brethren from time to time. And that causes somebody that's weaker to quit, but it didn't cause Paul to quit. The weeping prophet, Jeremiah,
was one that
was often discouraged. In Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 1, he said, "Oh, that my head were waters, and my eyes the fountain of tears, that I might weep day and night for the slain of the daughter of my people." That's a very poetic way of saying that he was very distressed and very depressed, and it sounds like someone that's at the end of his rope that could quit. But if you read on in Jeremiah chapter 20, verse 9, he says, "If I say I will not mention him or speak any more in his name, there is in my heart as it were a burning fire and shut up in my bones, and I am weary with holding it in, and I cannot." So he said, even if I wanted to stop talking about this, even if I wanted to stop preaching and prophesying, I couldn't do it because it's inside, and I want to talk about these things. So he was often discouraged, but he didn't stop his job. Many times, those that preach the gospel are in areas where it's very difficult for them to preach. It may be that it's in a foreign country. It could be that it's someplace locally where there are just brethren that are not, behaving the way that they should, or there's strife and there's contention and division within the congregation. And sometimes, being a preacher's kid, I heard many of those kind of stories when people would confide with my father about, here's what I'm dealing with at this congregation, or, how would you recommend that we work on this problem? And a lot of times you hear those things and say, why would somebody want to do that? Why would somebody want to be engaged in an occupation where there's this constant stress? And I understand that a lot of times I was hearing just bits and pieces and really not hearing the quality of all of their life, but maybe it was just a moment in time that I was being told about. But the point is that here you have Jeremiah that's saying, this is really not a good situation for me, but I have no choice but to keep teaching because it's something that's important. It's something that burned in his heart to teach. And it's the same way with sowing the gospel. If it's something that you believe in, if it's something that you know is going to help someone, then you don't give up on it, regardless of what the obstacles are, and understand that in the end it is going to bring forth fruit. And even if you're not the one that sees that fruit, it may come at another time. Jesus and his apostles were often ridiculed and discouraged and were attacked, and undeservedly so, but they continued the message of preaching the gospel. One final point, and the lesson be yours: the danger of having a self-centered or prideful attitude. We've been talking a lot about what to do or what not to do when you don't have success, but what if you're very successful? I've met some that will brag about how many people they baptized in the last year. And they will talk about those things. And I think that it's a good thing that they are successful in that work. I wouldn't take anything away from that. But there's one particular individual that I heard over and over, because I spent a lot of time with him. He was always telling others, "Last year, I baptized 24 people. And the year before that, I baptized 28. The year before that, I baptized 31. And this year, I think I'm going to baptize 32. And so he was bragging about that to others. And so that was not a great impression that he was leaving on others, because of you'd have to hear the whole context of the way that was framed. But he was taking credit. He wanted to take credit for those things. And in a lot of cases, there were a lot of people that were involved in teaching the gospel to these people. Now, he may have been the one who actually baptized that individual, but he was not the one that taught them. It may have been their family. It may have been a friend or somebody else. But
that was a notch for him if he was the one that baptized them. And, you know, that's, you might consider that just to be a little picky point that I'm making, but the point is that we don't want to be too discouraged when things don't seem to be going well, and we don't want to get too prideful when things seem to be going great. And it's kind of that way with children sometimes. If our children are doing really well, we want to take all the credit for being a great parent. But if they go and do something they shouldn't, then we say, well, he made that choice himself. So we understand that there's nothing wrong with praise. But we need to remember who it is that we're serving. That we're serving God. God's Word is what needs to get the praise. We're just sowing the seed. We didn't create the seed. We didn't write the Bible. We're just giving the Word to others, and they can do with it what they want. And the praise and the glory needs to go to God and not to us when somebody responds to the gospel of Christ. Paul didn't take credit for it. And anybody that has the right attitude doesn't as well. Galatians chapter 6, verse 9 tells us, in due season we reap if we do not lose heart. You know, pride has been said to be a very strange disease. It makes everybody sick except the person that has it. And so we don't need to be prideful when it comes to the gospel of Christ. Again, the sower's job is to sow, like it is the postman's job to post, to put letters in the mailbox, to deliver the mail. If people don't respond, you've done your job. So we need to guard against these dangers of false expectations, expecting instant success, or becoming discouraged because of difficulty or being prideful. So let's remember the parable of the sower and what it represents. And many times when we read that parable, we think about the soil, and rightly so. It is really a parable about the soils and the heart being prepared. But we also need to remember that there was a sower that went forth sowing seed, and that we have a responsibility as Christians to do that so it can fall upon those hearts that are good and honest. If we help you in any way to respond to the gospel of Christ, if you have that good and honest heart and you want to take advantage of that sacrifice that Jesus made for us, we'd invite you to come while we stand and sing.